Today we have a very, very exciting young man who's going to be speaking to us. Murli, Mr. K.L. Muridhara, he's been a friend of mine for almost 2 decades and has an amazing career, first as a professional and as an entrepreneur. But Murli, let's start from the beginning. Let's talk about where you studied. You've told me stories about your college, your engineering college, and then how you suddenly discovered that you could do an MBA and then you went to XLRI. But I'd love to hear it from you.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity, Ash. this is all giving back for all the things that we have received from you. My name, by the way, is now Murli Dara Kadava.
Okay.
When I joined Citibank, which we will come back to later, when I joined Citibank, I was the batch was asked to join for management training directly in Singapore, and I had to rush to make my passport. And during the making of the passport is where the guy asked, what's your surname? And I didn't have one. And that is when I said, okay, maybe we will expand my K into Kadaba. And that's how Murli Dara Kadaba happened. Kadaba.
Okay.
And in the class, fortunately, because of, I think, it's primarily because of tables, I think, at home, I was given a double promotion very early. So I ended up with kids 2 years older than me throughout my education cycle all the way up to 12th standard. So somewhere in between, we moved to Tumkur. In Tumkur, I did my high school. I did my pre-university, 11th and 12th standard. And I can tell you, the day I was born, everybody had decided I should be an engineer. And you know what happens in South, you're either an engineer or a doctor, or you can basically be a non-existent guy. So I was an engineer. So I was on the railroad to be an engineer. There was no exercising of free will ever. And so I did what I was told to. I did well in school, obviously, you know, determined to be ahead of the class. Got into a good school, very good school in engineering. But I can tell you today, I had no idea that there was something called IIT. Nobody told me. I had no relative in IIT, no friends in IIT, no friends of my parents who had been to IIT. Nobody said that if you went to IIT, these are the kind of things you can get as a return on investment. So we had no idea. I said, okay, I have to become an engineer and I should score very well to become an engineer to get a good school, which I did. And I went and joined and I studied in Mysore. I did mechanical engineering. Actually, pretty enjoyed parts of engineering. Stayed in a hostel. It was a Brahmin's hostel. I don't think the dad could have provided a lot of money. So I had a lot of scholarship that helped me graduate. And I stayed in a school, I stayed in a hostel, which I think a lot of, which lived on gratis. I think there was a lot of maybe reasonably well-to-do Brahmins who would donate a lot of stuff. And so I think my formative years were in a place where I think today when I think about it, I should be extremely grateful for all the good things that happened my way. But the sum and substance is I actually graduated pretty high in ranking for the university. I was a topper for like half a dozen times out of 10 semesters. In the final year, I was scoring near top. Something happened in one of the tests where the teacher made a mistake and I did not get the rank that I should have. And I think it had affected me a lot at that point in time and went back to argue this with the teacher. And he said, look, in life, these things keep happening. You have to start. That was, I guess, the first knock. Fortunately, I mean, you know, there was nothing I could have done. So I walked away from there and joined Suzuki as an engineer in Suzuki, which is a TVS company, the first Japanese venture, which went in with a two-stroke engine motorbike as opposed to Hero Honda, which went in with a four-stroke motorbike. And I can tell you, there is a world of difference between 2 and 4 and a world of success, a difference in success between that single choice of wanting to be a two-stroke engine versus a four-stroke. Because if you remember, Hero Honda came out with Fill It, Shut It, Forget It campaign, which basically played on the mileage of the vehicle. And no matter what you did, Suzuki was giving like 50% mileage of what Hero Honda was doing. but the experience was invaluable. I was in
that's the reason Suzuki continued with the line of Kitna Deti Hai.
Maybe. now on the Maruti Suzuki. That's true.
That's what I mean.
But on in Suzuki, they couldn't say that. I mean, kuch nahi deti thi. So I was in the trenches. Although it was a fabulous experience in the sense I put the assembly line for the engine and for the motorbike. I assembled, hand assembled the first bike. I was an young engineer standing there, and then you are putting it together. You are trying to figure out what is a pneumatic tool. You are putting the assembly lines out there, adjusting the pressure, looking at the torque, the threads will break off, shearing of the, you know, the thread. There were some local parts, none of them were up to the quality standard. So you're trying to figure out. And I'm also dealing with union staff on the assembly line who are talking to me in Tamil. And I'm not from Tamil Nadu. So I was like Kannada guy. I had only seen Tamil movies and I had kind of a working knowledge of Tamil. And we are like discussing how to assemble. And I am using my stupid Tamil on these people. And I believe I had no sense of the respect that one has to you, you know, in the language. There are ways in which, like G in Hindi, right? So there are ways in which you make the conversation very respectable. But mine was absolutely movie kind of stuff. And I think it was pejorative, if anything. So one of the guys really called me on the side and said, dude, if you really want to talk to us in Tamil, you will get hit and then you'll really have broken bones if this is the way you converse. Mm. I said, look, I mean, what's wrong? I really don't know. And then he said, but you know, the language is very pejorative. Mm. I mean, you know, you are like really pretty much talking to us like we are like sweepers or something like that. And that was a big knock. And I had to go back and try and figure out how the hell to deal with 200, 300 people on the assembly line and get things to work our way and not have a big issue out there. So that was a good management learning. Coming to MBA, every day I would go from Bangalore to Hosur. It was a 40-minute drive. And there were friends who were engineers like me, and we were all wearing uniforms. So in the bus, there would be this stylish clan. There were like half a dozen of them who would somehow have the front seat. And they would talk in different language. They had a different style. They would comb differently. They had pizzazz, right? And we were like absolutely desi kids at the back and wonder who are these guys and, you know, why are they different and what are they doing? Mm. And then they would do, you know, shooting of the bike, you know, taking it out for test drives and, you know, talking to press and doing things like what these youngsters are doing out here. And we would be mesmerized, you know, I mean, what is this, you know, maybe this is what I should be doing. So I said, okay, I'll sit with one of these guys and figure out what's tripping like. So I asked, okay, you know, what is this? So he said, this is all marketing, advertising, and you know, this is what we do. Ultimately, the product has to be so marketed in the market. We got to talk about its features and benefits and make it attractive and people should buy. I said, that's awesome. I want to be there. So they said, okay, if you want to be there, you have to do MBA. I said, what is MBA? I didn't know there was something called MBA. So what is MBA? And say, okay, this is it, Indian Institute, and there are these four schools. So I went back to my Desi gang and I said, dude, I think we have to do MBA now. So they said, okay, we will all do MBA, four of us, believe it or not. We said, okay, this is what we should do. So this was a 3-month intense work, got through Excel, didn't get through IIMs, which is a story in itself, but got through Excel. Then I went to my manager and I said, look, I need to do this. And for the first time ever in TVS Suzuki, they extended a sabbatical. They said, okay, go and do. And if you feel like coming back, your job is open, which I thought was very, very nice. And that just gave me a moral courage, nothing else. And I didn't know really what happens in MBA. I wanted to do MBA. I got into have an opportunity, but I still don't know really what will come out of this whole thing and what's the huge difference out here. Mm-hmm. And then the issue was, how do you fund this whole thing? By the way, in Excel also, I got some call. So I still remember, I went to a Canara Bank branch close to my house, walked into the manager's room and I said, look, I got this MBA entrance exam. I have cleared. This is the admission. I want a loan. So he's like shocked. He's saying, who is this kid who just walks in? So I said, this is what I need. And he said, how much? I said, look, no, I think the total fees was 33,000 bucks. That was it.
Yeah.
So I said, I need 33,000 rupees over 2 years. I'll send you the bills. You just pay directly the school. That's good enough. I got some scall which will take care of my stuff. So you do this. So he was like, you write to me, make an application and we will see. I still remember, I think I have a copy at home, 6-7 pages of nonsensical letter I wrote. I wrote everything I wanted to write in that because I really needed that loan. I went there and he said, okay, we will process it, but I need your dad's signature. And it was like really a bummer because I didn't want to ask him. But I went back and I said, Dad, I need a signature. Don't worry about it because it's basically taken care of. I mean, you know, I'm sure he was proud and he must have gone through his own set of emotions. But the long and short is he signed off. I got the loan. I sold my bike, which was an Isuzu Suzuki proud bike of mine, which went at a premium. Those days you could sell it at a price higher than the price at which you bought.
Yeah.
So I sold it to my cousin, actually made more money. I had a small tape recorder this size, I think, that gave me $300. I sold that also, took some money, put it in the bank, went there. At the end of the first year in Excel, I worked for 2 months. That gave me some money. That money plus the bike money was good enough. And these guys paid the fees. I was an MBA and I was a, believe it or not, a topper in Excel. I was number two.
Fantastic.
I did have another guy ahead of me, but too bad.
Fantastic.
But I was number two there. I scored well. I started low, but again, it was intense work. I knew what I had left behind. I was aware of my responsibilities. And I said, dude, I mean, you know, you got to do well. So long and short, worked very well.
Okay.
First day zero, Citibank was there. And the very day in the evening, they announced. And I was, I guess, the first guy to be placed in Excel.
Excellent. how long did you spend with Citibank? How many years?
I spent, 88 is when I joined. 88 May, like I said, I went to Singapore. I joined Citi and we joined in Singapore. This was a batch of some 50, 60 people. And it was a fabulous batch of intellect. I mean, I think everybody was a Rambo, middle class, high achievement orientation, high ambition. And Citi had hand-picked people from every school.
Correct.
Who all looked the same.
Mm-hmm.
We could have said that we are from the same gene pool.
Mm-hmm.
We looked the same. Now, everybody was mostly with engineering background. And we all sit there and then we are cracking problems. That was okay. But I think we had terrible social skill sets, right? And we were on a dhow, you know, like a boat one evening. And one of the seniors in Citi, I mean, there were quite a few guys who were there and there were a lot of Indians who were in Singapore that time. So those guys were there and we were like 4 or 5 of us, all engineering. It's mostly IIM, Ahmedabad gang. I was hanging out with those guys. Excel, maybe we had just one more person or maybe nobody was there. So I was hanging out with these guys and then this guy comes and then gives an unsolicited advice. He says, guys, everything is okay. Intelligence is all right. But you guys, if you don't know how to open up and how to have a good time, you'll go nowhere in the banking circles. I said, okay, that's great. Good advice. But we still didn't know what the hell to do.
Mm.
So, but that was the way Citi life began.
Mm.
And I think it was very clear that there was no way they would put me as a relationship manager to do wealth management or whatever. They said, here is an engineer. He's willing to work like a bloody donkey. Put him in operations, right? So I come back to Bombay. I'm in operations team. I'm part of the technology and operations. I had stayed away from technology for as long as I could remember. Then I was deep into technology. I worked exactly like the way I did in my engineering.
Mm-hmm.
I was working pretty much similar hours. I think it was 7 to 2 kind of a time frame. Lost every friend. Had no life outside of bank. But it was fabulous from learning perspective. I think Citi was a phenomenal training ground. In terms of just helping you learn. My confidence level got boosted, my technical skills, my operation skills. They moved me into multiple roles, my financial control capability, business analysis and planning, presentations to the country manager, presentations for country manager, for him to present to outsiders, which involved a lot of variance analysis and a lot of other stuff, a lot of spreadsheet capabilities and competencies. So the city, I think, moved me a lot. I really became pretty good in how banking needs to be done. I was still far away from how, as a human being, I should be. There were still, I would say, phenomenal gaps, dramatic gaps, which eventually I started plugging. But in terms of just capability, execution, ordering your priorities, delivering on the priorities, creating a reasonably good impression as a doer. I think I did a fab job, and it helped in early growth, good promotions, very good ratings, very good growth, and then quickly moved into mortgages, did a lot of product development, did distribution, did some, let's say, industry-leading innovation, both in product and in distribution. Created shelters as a concept, created a concept called PropShop, which was bringing in developers into a single location, doing friction-free lending, things that took maybe 10-15 years for the industry to take, to mature into. We started doing those things very early, and there are some of those things are still there in city and still being talked about. So those were signature victories as an individual. I could recruit good. I could really motivate a team. I was, I would lose my cool pretty fast. I was driving the team from energy perspective quite hard. But soft skills were lacking quite a bit, I would say. 10-year window, almost 9.5 years in city. After a good stint in South, moved back to Bombay, took over all the branch banking as area director based out of Bombay, and was moved to manage products for investment products for the globe, for NRIs and Indians. Just when I was moving into that role, I was headhunted by American Express. Amex invited me to go through a session. That was 97, mid-97.
That would have made you one of the very young country heads of American Express.
So 97 was, I just joined as a country head for financial services. Okay. That was not the country manager's role.
Okay.
I was still quite young, but they gave me a very good designation. And within city, I could have moved out. And so those are the, serendipity, right? I mean, there are things that you do which you can eventually connect the dots. At that time, there was no concept of connecting the dot. It was about, I would have been sent to Poland or Hungary or one of those really cold countries. I was saying, oh my God, 8, 10 months of no sun and hanging around in some unknown place doing some business, which I don't know whether I would succeed or not in, versus that market, which I know very well, and a job at a senior level in a company which is well respected. So the choice was India and American Express versus Citi and Poland or Hungary or one of those markets. So to me, this looked better. I'll tell you later how this made sense. But at that stage, it made very good sense.
No, to me, it makes a lot of sense. The thing I've shared with you, when I finished my business school in 79, Citibank offered me a job.
Yeah.
And I joined ITC, but I got a call from the senior VP of Citibank.
Yeah.
And he said, why aren't you joining me? Is it the salary that is bothering you? I said, no, I'm joining at 1,000 rupees lower than what you're offering. Can you confirm to me that you are giving me the same salary as you give to an MBA in America?
Oh, okay.
And he said, no, we cannot give that. I said, in which case I will not join. Okay. So I understand your reason.
Yeah. So my reason was nothing to do with the money. My reason, subsequently, I'll tell you how this has worked out for me. But 97, I think this was a very good break. This was an opportunity to create financial services for American Express. I think that is like, piece of white paper on which you're going to now make things happen. So I could put all my learnings in lending, in wealth management, in premium banking, in Citi Gold, equivalents. And then we created a number of phenomenal wins in Amex very quickly. The other thing that worked in my favor was I could bring the best of breed to work with me. I think there were people who were ready for a combination of working with Murli and working in American Express as a good combo. Had a fabulous team. And within a couple of years, we did not take too much of capital from the company. We could get to profitability very, very quickly on the back of branches that already existed. And we put some very innovative lending programs in the market. So much so that in 2000, when they started relooking at how the organization should be defined in India, and there were some changes to the card business. The card business, there are different philosophies for the card business. So, it wasn't making money, but it was not meant to make money. It's not like it's not sure. For want of trying or something. I think it's a developed economy product. India was still developing. The slice of the company, the slice of the target market which is attractive to the company was very small. But the company was not willing to change the approach to target market. So it had to deal with whatever was there. So that was the strategy related issue. But when the changes were coming in, the postings worked out, and then they merged the bank and the card business. And that is when I was one of the youngster who made it as the country manager for the bank and the card business and all consumer businesses. So which was the business that American Express was focused on. So that was 2001, August. I was on the top of the world. It was a phenomenal break. I think I felt good. And in American Express, in those 4 years, the important thing also is, while I continued, I guess, with my will to win and my speed of execution or the aggression to do things fast, I had tempered a lot in terms of ability to deal with environment, deal with people, bring in sophistication into how you have conversations, bring in self-introspection as an idea, looking at how do you use scarce capital in a better way, as opposed to the way in Citi, you got an idea, you threw the money. So there were many, many learnings. Actually, Amex is a far more people-oriented setup and far more analytical company versus Citi, which is far more in the market kind of a company. So there were, I was getting great learnings from both the setups. And in 2001, I became the overall head for the bank and card business as a whole. And that is when I moved to Delhi. That is when the first time I moved to Delhi with my own set of issues around what Delhi would be like. But the interesting thing there is, so I was, this was the, Bristol was the only hotel in Gurgaon. Yeah. So I stayed there and I would go to office from Bristol. And that was my career high, I would define it as.
You then moved from Amex into Reliance.
Yeah.
You built their financial services business. Yeah. And then you moved into being an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Where you are one of the leading fintech companies in the country.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll talk a little bit about Reliance, but more on your fintech experience. And then your Magic, the company that you formed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So talk to us about.
So there is a story in itself. So now come back to 45 and wanting to be in India. So now that the decision was made that I wouldn't move out of the country, the question was, so what do you want to do? And that is when I think the Amex job was more than doing the job. It was about knowing what's happening in the environment. So my awareness of India in GDP terms, in growth terms, in per capita terms, started taking shape around the 2000-2001 time frame. So when you look back on India, till 91, we were like a $100 billion kind of a country. That was the GDP. 91, when the crisis happened, we were still pretty much under $300 billion and growing at Hindu rate of growth, with basically per capita was only coming down because you were growing at 3%, your population was growing at that rate, and your currency was depreciating. So country was not really growing from a per capita perspective. 91 is when something happened and the growth started showing up. And by the time I started looking at some of this information, it was evident that we were doubling as a GDP in 3-4 year kinds of time frames. So I said, okay, if this is what is going to happen to the country, no matter what you pick up as an idea, you can get scale in a country like this. So that was the first realization. Do anything you want, there will be scale. Second thing that happened was I joined YPO, thanks to you. And I had a fabulous informal board available, which could guide me on how I should think about my next phase in life. Third is, working for an MNC as a CEO, there is a time frame. You have a kind of a you know that these companies need different kinds of leadership over a period. The time when I was there, they needed a guy who could put rapid growth. But there would come a time when they would want to then hold on and stabilize the ship and all that. That needs a different leadership.
Yeah.
So there would be a time when I should look at, for the good of the company, look at exiting myself. Because if I did not want to go abroad, it is not fair for me to just continue and sit in the same job, which would hurt the company's aspirations. So I had put a 4-5 year kind of a time frame there. Come 2006, I was 44. I had done what I had to do. There was not another job that I could have done in the country. I didn't want to go outside. So it was all falling into place. So one fine day, there is a story around why on that day I went and then announced that this is it, I am quitting. But there were other guys like me who were thinking exactly like I did. And they went to their respective offices and they all declared that they are exiting. And each one was doing very well, were in similar positions, were of similar age. And they all announced in their respective setups that they're going to exit. And I said, okay, this is it. Let me exit as well. So I went in and announced it. So the idea, I think, at that stage was to be in financial services. There was insurance was taking off quite well. So we were looking at, me and I and my friend, were looking at an insurance venture where we were to be the local shareholders. And there was an outside company that was supposed to put in the money and we were supposed to go and put a life insurance business in order in the country. Fate took me to Mukesh Bhai's office. He was a customer at some point in time. So I don't know how exactly they got the name or whatever. Mm. So I went there and the conversation was energizing uplifting. Out there, the conversation was about how Reliance Retail would take shape, how it's going to be the largest, biggest, craziest thing that will happen in the country. So I had the travel background, I had the membership background, I had the financial services across the board. So that was, I guess, a kind of a very good match. But I was to be an entrepreneur. So I requested that I would come and do this because I never worked in an Indian company. I wanted to learn what makes Reliance so successful. I wanted to learn how cash flow is managed in a company, which in a bank, money is the, raw material, finished product, work in progress, inventory, everything is money. Mm-hmm. So you really do not have the boxes like the way it is in a company. So I wanted to learn that part of it. So I requested that, look, I will do a 36-month work, but I really want to be on my own and if that is okay. But importantly, I think working with Mr. Ambani is a different exercise. What is great out there is, he's humble. Second, the way he lays out a vision, I have never seen anybody doing that. His commitment to India is unparalleled. Then he doesn't want to do what others have already done. Mm-hmm. So he is always looking for new idea, new way of doing it. And a big moat that will create a kind of a competitive advantage that nobody would be able to cross for a long, long time. So it makes investment of capital worth it because you put the capital knowing fully well, no one will match it. And, the scale he laid out and the way he thinks 10 steps ahead. So there were so many things that was exciting in that conversation. So I really wanted to do this, but I still did not want to be a full-time employee all my time. So there was a learning opportunity with the best in the industry and perhaps in the world, as far as I am concerned. And I could give 3 years to get that learning going. So I took that role and it was a crazy ride. In the sense, within 12 months, I had put 5,000 people. We had put loyalty in the market. We had put insurance products in the market. I had signed a joint venture with Citi to do an NBFC. We had got credit card designs to launch a credit card business, only to see that financial services worldwide collapse. And Citi regretted their inability to get on with the joint venture because of what Citi was going through back home in US. And so we put a stop to the financial services part, and Mukesh Bhai said, just wait it out for a year and everything will be okay. But I said, look, I mean, you know, that is correct. I mean, financial services will have to be there. But I do have a window and aspiration for myself. And it was nice of him that he said that, look, go ahead and do whatever you want, and but you stay in the group. So I was, I think I have had a charming existence because I could continue to learn and think big, which I knew in, with my capital I couldn't do. But I could think big for a company, which no amount of big thinking is big enough. So you could continue to exercise your intellect to do big things in a setup which had the appetite to do big things and which had, which could challenge you even on those big ideas. You could learn in a university, which is the best university. Reliance Industries is the best university for learning. You could get the best people to work with you because Reliance was willing to pay to get the best talent in the system. And you had constant interaction with the leader. So that was awe-inspiring. And then you could build your business with whatever time you could do. But it had its constraints in the sense I wasn't ready to do a CEO job for my own business. I wanted it to be an investment-driven as opposed to execution-driven from my hand, because I wanted my time to be available for Reliance and the related work that we had to do there. So I put a lot of frames around where my entrepreneurial venture should take off. It was well deliberated, well thought through. It wasn't spur of the moment. I was no longer a spur of the moment guy, actually, after those many years of learning that I got from phenomenal institutions, Citi, Amex, and then Reliance. And 2006 to 2009, I worked as an employee. 2009 to 2019, I am still engaged with Reliance. I'm still, I guess, I still try hard to contribute to make sure that my contribution is regarded as value add within the system. I work hard to make sure that I repay the faith that the senior leadership has had in me. I'm extremely loyal to the firm, but in return, I have grown as, so I am the mentor for financial services in Reliance, which is Jio Finance. I have had first view of everything that has happened in Jio. I've looked at how 300 million customers were brought into the system in 1 year, 1.5 years time frame. We created money. We have looked at strategy. We have got the payment bank license. I recruited everybody into senior leadership into Jio Money and Jio Pay. We have just put a point of sale terminal into retail network, which is a phenomenal new idea. So I have been able to, from very close circles, and it needed for me to learn what's happening globally to be able to be on the cutting edge in that. So from a fintech, you could say anything that is happening in the world, I should know. I would know. I have spent time to know that. I spend 5-6 hours of reading every day. Over the last maybe 10 years, I must be reading 4-5 hours a day. So fintech, I'm there at the edge, I would say. Then I had to get involved in all the digital businesses, some of the digital businesses, which happened to come into Reliance through an acquisition. So working in Book My Show meant knowing everything about entertainment industry, knowing everything about how ticketing business works in anywhere in the world, what will happen to ticketing business over a period, what else we should do to be able to have a gainful advantage in the market, working with a bunch of possessed people. I mean, that's the entrepreneurial world in Book My Show is completely different. Working with a board which had investors who had different ideas of their own, who had different objectives, why they were there, financial investors versus strategic investors. How do you deal with a cap table concern? How do you deal with conflicts with the board? So those were great learnings, which I continue to enjoy and still sit on the board to do that. Yatra was another story, taking Yatra public, listing it in NASDAQ. Again, had concerns around cap table and players in the table. How to drive growth when you are not the number one in the market. Book My Show is number one. And we were trying to ward off competition. In Yatra, we were not number one. And we were trying to stay in competition despite not being number one. And in the internet world, market leader takes a lot, including the premium.
Yeah.
All the new money that comes your way comes into the market leader in internet business. The second one struggles to raise money. So those were great learning. Those are great learnings that I continue to have. And my business orientation as an entrepreneur moved into wealthy segment, which I was very comfortable with, something that had customer service requirement, which I was very comfortable with, concierge services, and essentially family office, which was a big gap in terms of, you know, people with 100 to 500 crore wealth. How do they want to be serviced? And they cannot set up a shop of their own. Okay. It's not large enough. It is not small enough for them to just be managed by some private wealth guys. So they had, different requirements, and plus families have their own set of issues, and being in YPO and having managed some of these relationships had a different point of, let's say, perspective for me. And we could put those things together, which includes coaching, by the way, include different perspectives together to create a family office of different flavors. So we actually put the first family office in India, which continues to flourish. We now have an office in Singapore and in London. The concierge business is quintessentially, which continues to do well as a servicer of concierge services. Correct. For the wealthy around the world. Then, of course, magic. Magic is a story that comes from actually thinking hard on what is the gap that we should cover. I think it is a quintessential entrepreneur way of doing things, which I would, if you were to say what is my advice to entrepreneur, that is where it will flow. I think it came out of a real need that people have, which is you have the money, you are at 50, you have made enough wealth, you now are worried about two, three things. One, you're going to live long. Now there is data to say that you're going to hit 80, 90, whatever. So you have done everything before you hit 50, and you're going to have as much of life ahead of you, and there is not too much to do. But there is a stretch life that you need to lead, and you need to be prepared to deal with that life, which includes, for sure, being keep making sure that your wealth is maintained, managed, and grown if possible, to not to touch your, let's say, the savings as much as you can, to stretch your work life as much as you can, and to enjoy and stay relevant to the extent that you can. So those are common needs of people in the 50 plus. So managing this money is a tricky animal. Now, a lot of people will say, you know, so much is going on in India. Take one example. India's GDP is rocketing, but India has limited options to invest. You have stock market. With black money going away, real estate is no longer attractive. You cannot just throw money and keep it there. Otherwise, real estate was a big deal. Gold was a big deal. Neither of them is seen as a productive avenue anymore. So what is a productive avenue to make sure that your money does not depreciate? Equity. Debt, these are the two. Now in equity, you can go to any market. If it is a growth economy, the size of the market is one time GDP. If it is super growth, 1.2 times. If it is flat country, not too much of growth, it is 0.8 of the GDP. It is, you can go 25 country, 30 country. This is a number at a macro level. You can't go wrong on that. Which means, if the country is a $2 trillion economy, your GDP is $2 trillion, so your stock market is $2 trillion. Now, if 33% of the country's GDP is the saving rate that India has, and that is not changing, 30% of $2 trillion is like $600 billion. Every year, if you want to now put it to something, and if the market's capacity is $2 trillion, if all this money chases that limited market, the $2 trillion will just inflate in value.
And if by 2030 we reach to $5 trillion, the numbers will be exponential.
But the whole problem is the stock is not of that value, but it inflates because too much money is chasing too few stocks.
Correct.
So the market will just inflate, but there is no underlying value to justify that. Debt market is not strong in India. Commodity market is not very strong in India. So the question is, what should people do? right? So the obvious answer is they should diversify. Mm. They should look at markets, not necessarily just in India. They should look at stable economies, diversify currency, diversify asset category, and diversify to the extent they can into different countries. Not too many options are available in the country. So the whole pitch was there is LRS, which legally allows you to take X amount of money for investment. But people just don't know how to take it, what to do when they take it out. How do you track it? How do you manage that investment if it is in some place? How do you deal with it? On the other hand, the quantum of money, while they are rich in India, the quantum that is allowed is not large enough for them to have a bargaining power when they go out to shop. So the entire idea of magic is collective bargaining. You bring the might because of the togetherness of a bunch of people. And when you are representing a bunch, then the size is large enough, though individually it is small. The smallness of size allows for risk taking. The size of the pool allows for bargaining. Hmm. And you could build systems, technology, compliance, processes, and relationships, and alliances and partnerships around the world by using that idea.
Wonderful.
So in 3 years, we have 37 deals, we have $40 million in the market, profitable from month one. More importantly, my own view as an entrepreneur is not about how much money I wanted to make. It was very clear. I wanted to learn every day and I wanted to be relevant to my community. Nothing beyond that. I don't need anybody to remember me when I die. But as long as I'm alive, my family, my close group of friends, the place where I live under neighborhood, and the companies that I work with, those people should find relevance in what I have to offer. And that's the only thing that has driven me. I think it is very well defined as an idea. And magic is created for that community. It has grown, and now we can actually add a lot more. We will do crowdsourcing as an idea. We are putting a lot of technology into it. We will have some funds in the US in the next few months. So there are three paths to growth. There is deal by deal, there is a fund, and then there is crowdsourcing. Heavy technology in everything that we are doing, but it is on the back of well thought out plan, not rushing to raise money from anybody, not giving company or idea in the hands of a financial investor to take a good look at what needs to be achieved and to be very elaborate in the way this will be thought and laid out. No hurry, but the idea and where I want to reach is pretty clear. So that's how it is taking shape.
So two more questions. Talk to me a little bit about what you would consider your learning from a failure.
Hmm.
And the final question would be, what would your advice be to a young entrepreneur? I mean, you had an amazing story and you've spoken a lot about it at length.
Yeah.
What would your advice be?
So
let's take the first one first.
Yeah, on the failure. So I think, Ash, I have a real issue there. I've had many failures, but I wouldn't call anything as a significant failure. I would say I have been attentive to learn from mistakes or errors. For example, I did tell you that somebody on the assembly line said, the way you talk to me is not going to get you anywhere.
Correct.
So now you could be defensive or you could learn from that and then see what you can do with it. So I would say, I don't think people had to tell me anything repeatedly.
Mm.
And I've been sensitive and I've been observing.
You also spoke about the feedback the Citibank guy gave on the Dow.
Yeah, there is a good idea for anybody in that. In the sense, a lot of success, I attributed it to my own hard work.
Sure.
And my own capability. The learning over a period is there are people who did not get anything in return, but they pushed your case. There are people that I know, and there are many who I am not even aware of,
correct,
who have pushed. So it is not about yourself. A lot of people are very good in what they do. This realization, a lot of people, I think, take time to understand. I certainly took a lot of time to understand that. And that has come out of learning again, that there are people who are making it happen. So luck plays a role. But being humble and being, while you can be aggressive in what you want to achieve, but with that, staying humble and making sure that people feel that they all contributed to the success is, I think, core to eventually achieving what you want to achieve. I think more than finance, satisfaction of having achieved something comes from being humble and getting people along. Okay. So that is a learning for me. The second one is just the way I was conversational, and then, you know, what the people told me in the trenches, in the assembly line is an important learning. In engineering, I had an impersonification issue. I wrote a paper for somebody else because I had already scored what I had to score. Didn't think it was such a big deal. I was like a ranker and doing well. Somebody was unwell and, you know, I didn't understand the implication. I went in and then wrote on behalf of someone. And I almost got fired from the college, and the guy said, you know, this is impersonification and you should be dismissed. And I said, what the hell? I mean, you know, really? And that guy actually was unwell. Next day he showed up, he had a Madras eye, and then, you know, this whatever happened, finally that guy took pity and then said, okay, everything squared up, you start from ground zero. And my best score was that particular subject in that year. But my best learning is, you got to think before, you know, jumping at any stupid idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That was the second learning. My brother's demise and how my entire life changed, career and work was all what I was good at. And that changed, and that was a huge learning, which has been positive eventually. So you got to look at everything as a something positive came out of that. Working in Reliance, all the things that I had learned, that I was thinking I was an entrepreneur in city because I could do anything I wanted to, but it was somebody else's money. Mm-hmm. In Reliance, I really learned how to really think with your money and think big. That learning came from the third company where I was associated with. In terms of investment, my risk management has been solid. I understand what I shouldn't do. I throw money pretty fast, but I can also swing back pretty easily. And if I don't want to do anything more, I'm willing to cut losses and exit. I've worked with a lot of startups now, worked with a lot of entrepreneurs. I think the common thing that I've seen for success is, I would say, so for an entrepreneur, conviction is crucial, backed by a lot of passion. You can't be asking others what is it that you should be doing. You should be based on what you want to really achieve. It should be solving a real problem. A lot of people just copy an idea from somewhere else, or maybe in China somebody has done, or in US somebody has done, and they think that that is what they should be doing. And youngsters with not as much of experience, if they are straight coming out of college, tend to just copy an idea. Doesn't mean it is bad. It is just that if they have the conviction and the energy and passion to go with it, they will go. Fast fail is a great idea, actually. If something doesn't work quickly, they can go back. They cut losses pretty easily. Their loss is not as much. But for somebody who has put 10 years in work life and has a family and has a child to take care of, their people have found it more difficult to jump into an entrepreneurship as an idea, where they have to make a case to the investor that why they should be back.
Correct.
But on the other hand, they are also asking them that you need to pay me at least so much to make sure that my lifestyle does not suffer. And the third thing is they have huge fear of failure. Now, my advice to that group would be that, look, failure is inherent to entrepreneurship. To be afraid of failure is to not to venture at all, then you shouldn't do it.
Sure.
But there are things that you can do. One is, I think the way you look at what you need to lead a life is either by increasing the needs and continue to earn to a point where those needs are met, or to more optimize the expense side of the equation to say at what level I can have a reasonably decent life and for what period of time I can do that. If you can draw a line on the expense side and become more pragmatic around how much you need, and you work hard to get to a 12 to 18 month kind of a lifeline, then the only thing that you need to have is, if this does not work, it is not the end of the world. So the confidence that you can go back and seek a job if you want, or do another gig, that you had the conviction and capability in you that has been recognized by the investor world that you will be backed again. That conviction, I think the country has enough opportunity for people in that category. I think investors are looking at people with some experience, because I think they bring a dimension to an idea that a startup with a 20, not that 20 year olds won't succeed, but in general, the 20 year old can only get to a point where scaling will be done by somebody else.
Correct.
So you are there to get it going for the spark, but invariably within the first 2-3 years, somebody else comes into the picture to scale up and run the show. But a 30 year old can take the idea and take you to its logical conclusion. So investors actually feel much more comfortable with somebody who has seen the world, but you can't be dogmatic. You can't be, you should be flexible enough to take new ideas. You got to put a very, very good mentor team. I think a lot of people don't spend time thinking about who can assist them. They look at who can give them money, but they don't look at who can help them through the thinking process. So that is one thing that, I mean, at 45, when I became an entrepreneur, I completely dependent on my forum as my mentor board, and I had nothing to hide from them, and I could get a best out of those 10 people. So where are those 10 people for these startups? They don't have.
Correct.
I mean, normally they have friends and who will be thinking like them. They need a diversified thought process, and you got to be able to solve a real problem, and you got to be passionate about that idea, as opposed to, in this one, I can quickly get to $100 million value. So if you're constantly looking at how much money I can make, there are few successes, but a lot of failures, because you're driven by a wrong idea. What about the journey? You got to think about the journey and enjoy the process of creation. As an entrepreneur, that is the crucial. For me, that's what I look at. If somebody is not passionate about the creation and is only constantly looking at, this is what I want to reach within this time frame, that is not going to happen with my money. That's pretty much
okay. So Murali, thank you very much. I think you've been really expansive about a lot of things in your life. I think you've been very, very honest in a lot that you've spoken. I think a lot of our listeners and viewers are going to enjoy hearing your story. I mean, I think you had an incredible track record, and I know that next 20 years is going to be even better. So
thank you.
Good luck to you.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.